WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air.
I don't know just where I'm going. Try for the kingdom if I can, 'cause it makes me feel like I'm a man when I put a spike into my vein. And I tell you, things aren't quite the same when I'm rushing on my run, and I feel just like Jesus' son. And I guess that I just don't know, and I guess that I just don't know.
That's Lou Reed's song, Heroin, from the 1967 album The Velvet Underground and Nico. There's a new documentary about the band called The Velvet Underground, which is now showing in theaters and on Apple TV+. Our critic at large, John Power, says that Todd Haynes' film captures what made the group so momentous.
A few days after I arrived in Los Angeles, an ultra-hip music critic at my newspaper asked me what 60s bands I'd liked growing up. When I told him The Velvet Underground, he gave a derisive laugh. Everybody says that now. He was right. In their day, the Velvets were a largely arcane taste without a single hit song. It took the passing years to make their reputation and prove their influence. Half a century on, the band feels more relevantly alive than nearly all of its better-known contemporaries. Its songs still have the power to get under your skin. You see why in the new documentary, The Velvet Underground. Made by exactly the right filmmaker, Todd Haynes, this inventive, immersive movie takes you to the heart of the band's radical black hole magic. At the Velvet's core were two brilliant outsiders, Lou Reed, a spiky, ambitious child of the Long Island suburbs, and John Cale, a viola-playing devotee of avant-garde music who escaped his dreary childhood in Welsh coal mining country. The two met in 1964 New York, and their sensibilities sparked. Once they added guitarist Sterling Morrison and drummer Maureen Tucker, having a woman drummer was characteristically groundbreaking, they began creating music like no other. Theirs was an invasive, often mysterious sound, with throbbing rhythms, slashing strings, and Reed's flat voice singing of hooky, stinging lyrics that came steeped in the realities of prostitution, S&M, and hard drugs. The Velvet's music was so unwholesome, it made the Rolling Stones seem about as satanic as the Monkees. Hearing their great infamous song, Heroin, startled even a hardened voyeur like Andy Warhol, who promptly showed his genius for folding other people's talents into his own brand. Warhol became the Velvet's manager and made them the factory's house band. He put them in dazzling multimedia shows, had them take on the icy Nordic beauty Nico as their dead voice chanteuse, and designed the famous banana peel cover of their still astonishing first album. Here, Cale and later Reed talk about the kind of songs Reed wanted to record, songs that include heroin.
And Lou said, they won't let me record the songs I want to do. And that was like red to a bull. I said, what? And I said, what are the songs that you want? And he showed me these other songs.
I was writing about pain. And I was writing about things that hurt. And I was writing about reality as I knew it, or friends of mine had known it, or things I had seen or heard. Or I was interested in communicating to people who were on the outside.
He said, why won't they play? Because people would complain about these songs being about advocating the use of drugs. But they're not about drugs. They're about guys who are sick and dissatisfied with their lives. Why don't we go do it ourselves?
In tracing the band's rise and fall, Haynes hears most from Cale, a vivid, appealing talker. Sadly, Haynes couldn't interview Reed, who died in 2013, although that probably wouldn't have been fun. A trailblazing musician, but known to be nasty as a rattlesnake, he notoriously disliked interviews, even walking off this very show. Still, I like to think that Reed would have respected the integrity of Haynes, whose filmography boasts three daringly original music movies: Superstar, the Karen Carpenter story, Velvet Goldmine, and I'm Not There, which casts six different actors as Bob Dylan. No hagiographer, Haynes neatly sidesteps the usual rock knock banalities. He doesn't dwell on personal gossip, doesn't keep tellings that the Velvets were important, and doesn't trot out young music stars to make the band seem relevant to the kids. Instead, he plunges us into the Velvets and their world. Using cleverly chosen black and white TV footage and flurries of split-screen images, there's almost too much to look at. Haynes evokes the artistic Hadron Collider that was New York's multimedia 60s. This is a movie full of interesting ideas about the influences on the Velvet sound, the sexism of Warhol's factory, the importance of gayness to which Reed was attracted, and the rebellious meaning of the band's negativity. Dressed all in black while touring tie-dyed California, the Velvets anticipated punk not only in their sound, but in their hatred of hippies. If the last third of Haynes' film loses a bit of steam, that's because the Velvets did. This band that rightly took pride in being like no other fell, ironically enough, into the classic rock band clichés of ego battles, gripes about money, and purges. Burning to become a rock star, which he eventually did triumphantly, Reed forced the others to choose between him and Cale. The group made music for a while after Cale's departure, finally breaking up in 1970. But it wasn't the same. Their final album, Loaded, was merely a good rock album, not something transcendent. Early in the film, Cale tells Haynes that the band was always searching for, quote, how to be elegant and how to be brutal. At their best, as Haynes elegantly shows us, the Velvet Underground found what they were looking for.
John Powers reviewed the new Todd Haynes documentary, The Velvet Underground. It's now in theaters and on Apple TV+.